regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to have you with me today. We're going to be talking with Eric Pratt from Gun Owners of America here in just a second. I am sure you have seen the news out of West Virginia where a bill has been introduced that would establish a state agency to purchase machine guns, post-86 machine guns, by the way, who would then turn around and offer those machine guns for sale. Because apparently, under the National Firearms Act, this is allowed. This is a workaround, the Hughes Amendment, which prevents, generally speaking, the sale of any machine gun manufactured after 1986 to the civilian market. It's limited to military and law enforcement, with a couple of exceptions. And those exceptions include sales to and from, or transfers to and from, any federal agency, any state agency, basically any political subdivision. One of the things we'll talk about with Eric is whether or not towns could do this as well. So we've seen introduced a legislation introduced in West Virginia that would do this. Also, a bill just dropped in Kentucky that would do the same thing. So the interest among lawmakers is there. Whether or not there is enough juice to get these bills passed through the legislature, I think is another story. And of course, the gun control lobby is going to lose their collective minds over these bills. So we can expect a staunch opposition wherever they're introduced. But I think this is a fantastic and really fascinating development here. So very pleased that Eric Pratt could join us on the program. Let's get started. Take a look and a listen. Eric, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's really good to see you again.
It's great to be with you, Cam. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. And it's great to have this topic to talk about because, honestly, so much of this week has been spent talking about gun control bills that I'm really excited about what's going on in West Virginia. I'm sure most of the audience has already heard about what's going on here. But in case we've got some folks who have missed the big news, a bill that was filed in West Virginia this week would establish a process by which West Virginians could legally purchase post-86 made machine guns. How is this going to work, Eric?
You know, it's stunning, isn't it? Because for decades, we've been told you can't buy post-1986 machine guns. And that's true from a gun dealer. But our attorneys discovered this little nugget recently. They were looking at an FRT case, force reset triggers, and the DOJ or the ATF is returning FRTs that they had taken from people. And the state of New Jersey was objecting to that. And they said, you can't do that. You can't return. You can't give machine guns to average people. And the DOJ said two things in response. First of all, FRTs are not machine guns. They said that. Kudos to them for saying that. And then they also said Section 922-0 in the federal code that, you know, the Hughes Amendment, the machine gun ban on post-1986 machine guns, they said that doesn't apply to us. It doesn't apply to the federal government. So our attorney started looking back at the code once more, and sure enough, it doesn't apply to the federal government. They can give it to whoever they want or transfer post-86 machine guns. But it also goes on to say it doesn't apply to states that want to transfer them under their authority either. So we took this when we were at the SHOT Show last month. We talked to several state officials there, and they were super interested. West Virginia was one of them. And the idea was, hey, let's set up a state office to sell machine guns, just like, you know, Cam, you and I are in Virginia, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're familiar. There's ABC stores. It's a state-run store to sell alcohol. Well, this would be a state-run store that would be selling machine guns operated by the state police. And so that's what the bill does. It sets up an Office of Public Defense under the state police in West Virginia. The bill number is 1071, introduced by Senators Chris Rose and Zach Maynard. But let me tell you, here's where we need help.
Okay.
For people who live in West Virginia, call Senator Tom Willis's office. He's the Senate Judiciary Chairman. The bill has to move out of his by Sunday or it dies, or it has to move out of the Senate by Tuesday or it dies. That's what's called the crossover deadline. So he needs to hear from all West Virginians. Look, he's running for U.S. Senate. So I think his office would like to hear from folks all over the state. So everybody in the state, call his office. Let me give the phone number, and hopefully, you know, we can put up on the screen too, Cam, if that's able. But the number is 304-357-7867. That's the phone number, 304-357-7867. And if you want to get his email, it's tom.willis, and that's Willis with two L's, at WV, for West Virginia, WVSenate.gov. So tom.willis at WVSenate.gov. It is really important that he hears from folks because, you know, right now he's it either survives or dies depending on what he does.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, crossover deadlines are crucially important. Although we did see in Washington State, they just completely ignored it and suspended the rules to pass a gun control bill. So maybe that can happen in West Virginia too.
We'll see. You're right. There are,
it doesn't have to, right?
Yeah, there are other avenues. They're a little bit more difficult. Some involve nuclear options. Some involve adding amendments to must-pass bills. So there are other ways, but the easiest way is through the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he has the power to do it.
Okay. And, yeah, I mean, Eric, in all honesty, this may be a multi-year process, right? Because, as you say, you know, your attorneys just discovered this. There are going to be, I think, a lot of, unfortunately, I think there are going to be a lot of Republicans who say, listen, I love the Second Amendment. I love the right to keep your arms. But whew, machine guns? I mean, come on, man. You're asking me to do a lot here, right? So I think not only do we need to talk to lawmakers about this bill, but we also need to talk to our friends, our neighbors. We need to talk about what the Second Amendment truly protects here, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's really important. People should remember, you know, I was on C-SPAN recently, and the callers there, we weren't even talking about machine guns, but they just couldn't imagine, you know, like AR-15s. And they were like, oh, the founding fathers couldn't imagine technology like that today. It's kind of funny how the left now all of a sudden cares what the founding fathers think, right, when they say things like that. And I said, look, the founding fathers had repeating technology. Besides, if you're going to be consistent and limit it to the technology of the day, then that means the First Amendment only protects quill pen and parchments, right? But look, the founders had this type of technology. There was the Chambers flintlock machine gun, which, you know, had a rate of fire of about 120 rounds a minute. That was prior to 1800. There's, of course, the Girardoni long gun, which was a tubular fed, about 20 to 21 round magazine. There was the Belton flintlock, which fired a round per second. I mean, there's many examples of this from that day. And, you know, no historical record shows that they ever tried to ban these firearms. This was consistent with their view of the right to keep and bear arms. They considered it a God-given right, and they said that right shall not be infringed. And so, folks, you know, until they amend the Constitution, that's what we've got.
Absolutely. And I mean, and you know, really, I mean, not just at the founding era, but throughout American history, the idea was, of course, we want to see technological progress, right? And it really Absolutely. Wasn't until the 1930s that you had any sort of a limitation on the rate of fire regulated by the government, right? So, I mean, think about the technological advance from the average flintlock rifle and the average, you know, a cap and ball pistol to all of a sudden now the repeating revolver and then the lever action rifle. You know, these were firearms that not only added more capacity, but again, that increased the rate of fire. And you don't find attempts to, you know, ban revolvers, to ban lever action guns, to ban the Gatling gun, for, you know, for that matter, right? It's really not until the 1930s, until the mob and gangsters start using Tommy guns, that all of a sudden the federal government says, whoa. Okay, now we got to put some limitations here. But even if you go back to the Miller decision in 1939, right, the Supreme Court held that it did not, by the way, hold that the Second Amendment was a right to join a militia. I know some anti-gun activists want to say that. What the Supreme Court said is that the Second Amendment protects those arms that are most useful, right, to militia service. And this has been a conundrum ever since, because clearly if the U.S. military using select fire rifles, well, that would mean that the unorganized militia should have access to those firearms too.
You know, Cam, you're spot on. And the whole point of the Second Amendment was to empower the people to be able to defend themselves against tyranny. And that meant they were going to have the same arms that the military has. So, you know, the Bill of Rights was ratified in 1791. The very next year, they passed the Militia Act of 1792, which required free men to take to make sure that they acquired military arms and the ammunition for it, because they could be called up to defend their state or defend the country. And we even saw this as late as World War II. After Pearl Harbor, the governors of Hawaii and several other states like California, Virginia, and Maryland called up people like from rod and gun clubs and trap shooting clubs, and they encouraged them to help protect and patrol beaches and water supplies and railroads. And they weren't issued guns. They brought their own guns to help protect and help patrol. So, you know, this is not only very historical. I mean, this is part of who we are as Americans. It's built into our Constitution. And honestly, it's the best way to not only defend the country, but also to prevent, God forbid, that there would ever be attempts at tyranny. I mean, this is the way that we threw off tyranny in 1776. Right? I mean, it was, you know, it was using the military technology of the day. They were using military firearms, sometimes even much more accurate firearms than the British had.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I want to ask you too. I mean, we're talking about West Virginia, but I've seen a bill in Kentucky that's been introduced that that would do this as well. So are you, I know you said when you were at SHOT, you were talking to officials from a number of states. Is there interest? Do you think we're going to see more states beyond West Virginia and Kentucky introduce this legislation either this session or, you know, again, given the deadlines involved here, next session in some cases?
We are seeing tons of interest, Cam. Yeah, the Kentucky bill, HB 749 by Representative T.J. Roberts, it's word for word with the West Virginia bill. We've heard from New Hampshire. We would expect there to be a similar bill introduced shortly. We're hearing from other states also are very interested. With some of them, you know, you mentioned crossover deadlines, and I think some of them are going to time out, but they'll come back next year. And one of the exciting things about this, I mean, not only is it protecting and advancing our Second Amendment rights, there's also a tremendous financial gain for the state. And this is one of the ways that West Virginia is looking at this. For one thing, they're trying to eliminate their income tax. And so they've reduced it. They've dropped it about 25% in recent years. The eventual goal is to get to zero. They want to be a no income tax state. And they view this, the funding that would come from purchasing machine guns, as one way to help offset that, even to eliminate their debt, which they actually have a pretty sizable debt. And some of that has been because of the political hemorrhaging that they're suffering. I mean, they've had 72 years of population decline. It's the longest running population decline in the nation. They lost a seat recently in Congress because of the shrinking population. You know, they're losing to like states like California that is gaining them because of illegal population. And so they really want to attract people, but not just people. They want to attract business, and not just any businesses. They want to attract the right businesses. And what I'm hearing from people in the state, you know, they don't want the, you know, as they put it, the lefty data centers, right? They want patriotic, flag-waving companies. And this bill, as incredibly, has started that move. Our state director in West Virginia is in contact with multiple gun and magazine companies that want to flee tyrannical states like Virginia and set up shop in West Virginia. You know, we've got a poll out on our X page. Would you be more or less likely to move to West Virginia if they pass this bill. And guess what? The results are overwhelming. 94% right now are saying yes, they'd be more likely to move to West Virginia. So I think this is a good move for states like West Virginia. It's going to attract a lot of business, a lot of people, and a lot of dollars.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, I got to say personally, West Virginia is a beautiful state. If I ever am forced to leave Virginia, and I'm planning on standing and fighting as long as I can here against this anti-gun regime in place now. But if I ever do leave, that's going to be my first stop. I mean, it's a beautiful state. Love the people there. I you know, it's heartbreaking to see that population loss. It's heartbreaking to see what, you know, has happened to Appalachia. But this, I think you're right. I think this would be a way to, you know, reinvigorate the economy, but also to reinvigorate the lifeblood of West Virginia. And I'm really encouraged by the reaction that it has received so far. Remind folks again, who do we need to contact right now in the Senate Judiciary Committee to see this bill move forward?
Absolutely. Now, Senator Tom Willis, he is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And so if people, you know, the area code there, 304-357-7867. So 357-7867 and then tom.willis@wvsenate.gov. Please contact him. And, you know, he's a pro-gun guy, but, you know, so we want to encourage him to do the right thing to get this moving. So, you know, don't treat him as an enemy, but let's encourage him. Hey, this is a good thing for the state. So all of you who live in West Virginia, you know, he wants to be your next U.S. senator. So he would love to hear from anybody in the state.
All right. Eric, listen, thanks so much for coming on the program today. I look forward to continuing this conversation here in the future. Hopefully we'll have more good news to report. But thanks for everything you guys are doing at Gun Owners of America. I think this is a fantastic initiative, and I hope we see a lot of states hop on board.
I do, too. Thanks so much, Cam, for having me.
My thanks to Eric for joining us on the program. Looking forward to seeing how these bills fare and what other states we see similar legislation introduced in this session. Now, again, for some states, it may be too late to introduce bills for this year. But I'm hopeful that we'll be seeing progress next session as well. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case from East Chicago, where a man has received probation in a plea deal for stalking and pointing a firearm. In exchange for this guilty plea, prosecutors dropped several other charges against the 42-year-old suspect, including level one felony rape. That's right. A guy accused of stalking and raping somebody will do nothing more than probation. The defense attorney for Randy Martin said his client and the victim had, quote, some history. Said that Martin was proactively addressing mental health issues. Great. Doesn't excuse the alleged behavior, though, does it? Deputy Prosecutor Madeline Clement said that she believed that Martin was remorseful. Okay. In court, Martin said that he and the victim had not spoken in years. But according to the original probable cause affidavit, the woman alleged that Martin made her perform a sex act repeatedly, quote, for hours in February of 2024 when he was high on cocaine. During that time, he held a sword to the back of her legs. He also grew upset when he ran out of drugs and couldn't reach his dealer. She told officers that Martin had kept her awake all night, had poured bleach all over the house to, quote, kill the people that he thought were coming inside, stabbed holes in walls, mattresses, and furniture, thinking that there were people on the other side. He pointed a sword again at her leg on February 7, 2024, but it didn't break the skin. When he ended up stabbing a TV, she tried to leave. He ended up stabbing the wall near her and said that she would make him snap. Blocking her path while holding the sword, the woman said that she felt like she was a hostage. In a separate incident, the month before, Martin allegedly pointed a shotgun at her a day before his arrest in an unrelated case. Police returned to the home on February the 9th, 2 days after he allegedly went on this rampage, made her perform a sex act repeatedly, ended up, you know, pointing the sword at her leg, stabbing the TV. 2 days later, they show back up because Martin had caused more damage. They found a stabbed and burned mattress in the living room, the TV stabbed, the house, quote, in complete disarray. They found a sword with blood near the handle. They saw stab marks on the bedroom wall. They found four shell casings as well as a shotgun case. You know, it may have been that the act of pointing the shotgun at the woman might have been hard to prove, although ironically, that was one of the things that he pleaded guilty to. But I don't care how much remorse somebody showed. I don't care if they were high on cocaine at the time and they're trying to clean up their act now. That doesn't excuse the behavior at the time. And if there was, in fact, probable cause to believe that Martin sexually assaulted this woman, and certainly there was probable cause to indicate that she was accurate in describing some of the other behavior of Randy Martin, unless the victim was completely unwilling to testify, that's the only reason I could think that a plea deal would be offered here. I mean, it's not the only reason. Prosecutors wanting to get the easy win is another reason. But the only legitimate reason why prosecutors would offer a deal like this, I would imagine, would be because the witness refused to testify. But that's not indicated in this story by the Chicago Tribune. The prosecutor didn't say anything about the witness not wanting to come forward. So I got to say, again, I'm sort of at a loss here as to why somebody charged with such a serious, violent offense would be able to walk away with nothing more than 2 years probation. On to today's armed citizen story from Georgia, where a pair of women have been charged in a machete home invasion case. This was a case of machete versus shotgun because the homeowner was armed and able to protect himself. This is out of Coffee County, Georgia. Two women from Douglas, Georgia, now facing multiple felony charges after investigators say they were shot by a homeowner during that alleged armed home invasion in Coffee County. This was on February 21st. Coffee County Sheriff's Office responded to reports of gunshot victims. When they arrived, they found 35-year-old Stephanie Ann Nicole Castillo and 27-year-old Elizabeth Gaspar, both suffering from injuries that authorities say were sustained during an attempted robbery. Fox 5 in Atlanta reports that investigators of the Sheriff's Office and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation determined that the two women allegedly attacked a homeowner with a machete while they were attempting to rob him. The homeowner was able to discharge a shotgun in self-defense. Both suspects taken to a local hospital for medical treatment. They were later arrested. They're now charged with armed robbery, aggravated assault, first-degree home invasion. The Coffee County Sheriff's Office says it supports the right of law-abiding citizens to protect themselves and their families, which is good that the Sheriff's Office is reasserting that. And the homeowner not facing any charges because, again, the Sheriff's Office believes that he was acting in self-defense. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in Arlington, Texas, who helped save an autistic man after he became lost in a Arlington park. You know, everything is bigger in Texas, they say, including the size of their parks, I guess. And in this case, Jacob Bates got separated from his dad. They were cycling on mountain bike trails at River Legacy Park in Arlington. It was Monday night. Scott Bates was ahead of his son, Jacob, and apparently took his eyes off of his son for, 30 seconds or so, and then couldn't find him. And there were miles of trails in this park along the East Fork of the Trinity River. Bates is, yelling for help, yelling for his son. Arlington police eventually showed up, but they couldn't find Jacob Bates. But a guy named David Deadwilder saw the Facebook post that the Arlington police had put up and reached out to a drone operator who he knew, a guy named Chance Souser. So Deadwilder and Souser met Bates and his brother Tim Gundlach at the park. Souser lit up his drone, which had a thermal imaging camera, and actually was able to find Jacob in apparently a wooded corner of the park, standing alone, shivering, apparently, but he was alive. So Jacob's dad was able to locate a dirt road that was close to the location. They got there, though. They were blocked by a chain link fence that had barbed wire running along the top. Jacob's uncle, Mr. Gundlach, ended up taking some bolt cutters out of his truck, cut a hole in the chain link fence big enough for the two of them to squeeze through. Kunlak said that we followed the drone. He put us right over and we were yelling. And when Jacob yelled back, we knew that he was going to be okay. At that point, it was 5:30 in the morning. Jacob had been out all night in near freezing elements, taken to a local hospital as a precaution, treated for potential hypothermia, but he was released late Tuesday morning with a clean bill of health. Gunlock said, we're thankful to the Arlington police, and we're thankful for these two guys who don't know us. He said, you know, it's easy to get jaded about this world, but there's still some good people out there. So David Deadwilder, Chan Souser, there in the Arlington, Texas area, not necessarily in the right place, but they put themselves in the right place, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need. We thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again next Monday. But between now and then, be sure to check out BearingArms.com because we're going to keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the country, including the first gun control bills to head to Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger. That bill amending Measure 114 in Oregon is moving forward as well. We are seeing some good news out of Minnesota in the early days of the legislative session. Governor Tim Walz's anti-gun agenda thwarted for the moment, but still the potential for a lot of legislative shenanigans to come. And then we've got, you know, litigation, dozens of lawsuits filed around the country. We don't know when that Third Circuit opinion is going to come out addressing New Jersey's ban on so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines. It could be any day now. Supreme Court tomorrow going to be considering another number of Second Amendment cases, including some hardware bans. And so we'll be talking about that on Monday as well. So, again, lots to cover at BearingArms.com. Do appreciate you being a part of the program. And if you like what you see at BearingArms.com or the podcast, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I greatly appreciate that. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you're going to get some great benefits as well. So have a wonderful weekend. Hope you get a chance to do some shooting yourself. We'll see you back here Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.